From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Randall White. There's no question that the COVID-19 pandemic has drastically changed the way we work and interact with one another. In fact, right now I'm staring at several faces on Zoom, which is something that would not have taken place just a few months back. Working from home now means for many, they don't necessarily need to be within a short commute from their job, right? With a vaccine and effective treatment still quite a ways off, this means renters can shift to a more affordable or rural area pretty quickly. And if a company has made it clear that the remote option will continue in place beyond the pandemic, homeowners may even consider selling what they have and buying someplace else. We're already starting to see it in several areas. But there are other aspects of the pandemic that have homeowners hunkering down, freezing up the inventory of available homes for sale in many cities, including Sacramento. For more on all of this, we turn to Jeff Tucker. He's an economist with Zillow. That's a company that tracks real estate data. And welcome, Jeff. Great to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me on, Randall.
So home buyers expecting to score a bargain, which, you know, I've heard it among just friends who have said now's probably the time to buy because, you know, the economy's bad. And certainly with the last recession, that was definitely the case. But each recession is different, correct?
Absolutely. And in fact, the last recession was really particularly bound up with housing. We had a wave of foreclosures. We had a tremendous number of distressed sales and a lot of borrowers with very risky and sort of exotic mortgages where really, frankly, the mortgage defaults helped bring down the whole credit system, which led to the last recession. So our current recession was caused by a virus. It was caused by a pandemic. It did not originate in the housing market. And so the housing market's reacting to it very differently this time.
Yeah. So what is selling this time around?
So pretty much everything is selling surprisingly well. This spring, buyers and sellers both kind of pumped the brakes for a couple of months in March and April. And now buyers have come back in a big way so that now our pace of sales is actually up a little bit from this time last year. So I think a lot of buyers had the exact same idea you just mentioned, that this might be the time to get a good deal. It's certainly a good time to get a good deal on a mortgage. We now see mortgage rates below 3% for the first time ever. Sellers have been a little bit slower to come back to the market. They may still be thinking this isn't a great time to sell a house. I personally think most of them would actually be wrong about that, but as a consequence, the number of homes on the market nationwide is down 25% from this time last year. That's such that kind of the housing market shouldn't move that much. So we keep double checking our math because that is a staggering drop in the pool of homes for sale. So that means those buyers are crowding into fewer and fewer listings, bumping into each other and realizing they've got some competition out there they need to make a competitive offer.
Yeah.
So that is actually putting upward pressure on prices again.
Those homes are moving quickly. And who's doing the buying and selling? I know Zillow really dives into demographics and such. Are these younger buyers, middle-aged, older people cashing out? What's the deal?
There are a lot of millennials buying their first homes right now. And we've been expecting this for several years. You just have to look at the age distribution of the country. Some people call it the echo of the baby boom. There's an extra wave of several million people in their early 30s right now. And that's when Americans try to buy their first homes. So folks are hearing the good news about low interest rates. And if you're someone who still has your job, this seems like a great opportunity. And if you've maybe got a toddler running around the house or your apartment is feeling too small, people are feeling sort of extra motivated to go out and get something with a yard or something a little bit bigger.
What are some California hotspots? Sacramento was a real hotspot for the last few years. And the Bay Area, of course, has seen its growing cost of housing. What are we looking at right now? Are there hot and cool areas?
Yeah, especially relative to recent trends, Sacramento is hotter and the San Francisco Bay Area is a bit cooler. So again, sort of using inventory as sort of a measure of just how scarce the options are for buyers. Inventory is only down about 10% in San Francisco. And we're seeing a pretty healthy pace of those new listings, sort of how open is that faucet coming into the bathtub of listings? Pretty decent pace of people saying, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and sell in San Francisco. In Sacramento, on the other hand, inventory is down 30% year over year, which is staggering, another staggering number, and not a very quick pace of new listings joining the market. So that problem looks set to get worse. So that suggests to me that the that in the near term, Sacramento is going to continue feeling a lot of pressure on the listings that are on the market.
Finally, Jeff, you mentioned that interest rates are driving this to some degree. They're low. How long will they stay low, and can they go any lower?
It's hard to say without a crystal ball, but one kind of benchmark that we look at to get another sense of sort of medium term cost of debt is 10-year treasury yields. And those are way down below 1%, which given historical relationships suggests maybe mortgage rates ought to go as low as 2.7 or 2.8%. I think a lot of these sort of these regressions or these kind of relationships start to kind of bend as you approach zero on all your interest rates. So we can't know that for sure. But there's certainly no signal in there that they're going to skyrocket anytime soon.
And those are 30-year figures you were talking about.
That's right, for the 3%. So 15-year fixed rate mortgages are even lower.
Even lower. Wow. Zillow economist Jeff Tucker, I really appreciate your insight today. It sort of helps us get a foothold as we move into the rest of the show. So much appreciated. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, you too.
So as you know, buying and selling homes, for most of us anyway, is one of life's most stressful events. Make a mistake here and it could cost you a big chunk of your retirement savings. Handle it well and it could really set you up for life. There's so much at stake. Now, let's just add into the mix that we're in the middle of a pandemic, unlike anything we've seen in our lifetimes. And this means for some, seeing your new dream home might mean what, like a virtual tour? And selling your property could involve multiple people poking through your house at a time when we're supposed to be social distancing. You're not even having your close friends and family over, and now all of a sudden there are complete strangers walking through your kitchen and bedroom. And who moves at a time like this? Well, to learn more about the current state of real estate, let's turn to Erin Stumpf. She's a Coldwell Banker real estate broker and director with Sacramento Association of Realtors. And Erin, I've followed you on Twitter for a while now, and really it's a pleasure to speak with you in person. I guess actually there's still some virtual.
Virtually in person.
Virtually in person, right? But a pleasure nonetheless.
My pleasure.
So how would you sum up the real estate market in Sacramento right now?
Well, I think Jeff's comments for Sacramento's market are pretty right on. Our inventory is really low right now. Just for some perspective, in June, we had about 1,300 active listings. And in June of last year, we had almost double that. So we really have extremely low inventory right now, and it's kind of creating this imbalance of supply and demand that is really driving, prices up. We're getting multiple offers on a lot of listings, and our pending sales right now are just through the roof. We have a few weeks worth of inventory in Sacramento right now.
You've heard the expression, I'm sure you've even used it. There's never been a better time to buy a house, or there's never been a better time to sell a house. Are either of those true?
Well, I kind of don't like using hyperbole like that. I would say that, sellers right now, unless they, have a flawed property or really try to push the envelope on price, definitely have an upper hand position. Buyers, right now in multiple offer situations are having to offer more or give up some of their contingencies, make other concessions to the sellers in order to be competitive. I don't like saying, oh, it's a great time to buy, it's a great time to sell, but everyone has their motivations for different reasons. And right now we have some very motivated buyers and sellers who seem to be reluctant to sell, or who, it's hard to put a house on the market right now. There are a lot of barriers to getting a house ready for sale.
As we mentioned right off the start, we're really in a virtual world currently. So what is the process of seeing a home? Like, can you walk in and actually, touch the light fixtures and that sort of thing?
Well, we have a lot of rules governing what we can do right now. So for example, a year ago, you could walk into any number of open houses on a weekend. And right now, it's it's literally a misdemeanor for a realtor to hold an open house. We cannot hold open houses. That's a statewide rule. And that's really frustrating for a lot of people, for buyers, for sellers, for agents, but that's the world we live in. And no, when buyers, before I can schedule a buyer showing at any property, I have to have them sign a health declaration stating that they've not been exposed to COVID, that they don't have COVID symptoms, that they've not tested positive. We have to wear protective gear, which everyone has to wear a mask. Many people wear gloves and shoe booties. We have to wash our hands upon entry. We can only have two people in a property plus the agent at one time. Everything's done by appointment. And, you're not supposed to touch anything. So most sellers who are well prepared will leave all the, you know, drawers open, closet doors open. I mean, it's a much different environment today than it was before.
So essentially on like a Saturday or a Sunday, when you might typically have an open house, you could schedule people to come see it one after the other. So it seems like an open house, but it's all pre-scheduled.
Well, even that's really playing with fire. Everything needs to be scheduled in advance. People need to sign the health declaration electronically in advance. So you can't advertise an open house and just let people line up and then physically sign the declaration at the door. All that has to be orchestrated in advance. So no, a traditional open house is really not an option.
So before the pandemic, we kept hearing about this, recession that could be coming our way, and because the previous recession, as we mentioned with Jeff, was caused by the housing market, what are realtors expecting or fearing? Any type of market crash or bottoming out coming soon?
Yeah, again, I don't like to use that kind of hyperbole, but when everything first started to lock down in March, the air kind of left the market for a minute. When Sacramento County issued its health order and then the state in the same week issued its health order, real estate was not considered essential at that time. So realtors from mid-March until April 7th were actually not allowed to work in person in any capacity at all. Mm. So of course that alone took a lot of the wind out of the market because we literally couldn't work. Our transactions that were in progress came to a grinding halt. It was really difficult to do a lot of the things that, you need to do to when you physically access a property. You can't do, it's very difficult to do an appraisal. You have a hard time scheduling inspections and things like that. So, for a good 3-week period, we really were dead in the water. Our transactions were dead in the water. And at that time, of course, we had nationally, millions of people filing for unemployment. And in California, and specifically this area, we had many people, lose their work, get furloughed, or fear losing their jobs. So, things kind of paused for a good month.
Yeah. Finally, Aaron, sorry, I'm getting a little bit of feedback. In about a minute, could you help us understand, are we still seeing the influx of buyers from the Bay Area?
Yes. Anecdotally, I can share my experience with you. I have numerous clients that I'm personally working with right now. I closed one last week. I had home inspections for another this week, and I'm actively showing property to Bay Area buyers who have been told they're permanently working from home, and they want to buy in an area that is nice and that they can afford. And so Sacramento seems to be a destination from what I have seen.
Right. So it's now more permanent. Mm-hmm. Erin Stumpf, she's a Coldwell Banker real estate broker and director with Sacramento Association of Realtors, with a snapshot of what we're seeing in the Sacramento area real estate market right now. Erin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And then up next, we're going to dive into the Sacramento area's rental market. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Randall White, and we're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Randall White, and our big conversation today is all about where we live. And owning a place to live, especially in California, is just not possible for many of us, which means renting a place is likely your main option. Again, given that we're in the middle of a pandemic, what does that mean for rental prices, availability, and lease terms? And how do you even see a property like we just discussed with the real estate agent? Well, for that, we turn to Cindy Brilla with Mind Property Management, a company that manages thousands of homes and apartments in the greater Sacramento region. And welcome to the program, Cindy.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you bet. So overall, the impact of COVID-19 on the local rental market, what are we seeing?
What we are seeing currently is the market has softened slightly in regards to rents that we're offering for vacant units. So we do have to have interest in the units, and the market rate prior to this pandemic was slightly higher than what we're offering now. Mm-hmm. We're also offering concessions for some of our properties to entice people to look at them and lease them. And so that's the overall market is softened slightly.
Soft. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, since this pandemic unfortunately hit us.
Cindy, does the fact that Sac State is holding entirely online classes and UC Davis play a role in that at all, because you don't have that influx of college students renting, and so then that opens up all those units?
Yeah, actually it does have an effect because of the online school system now. It does slightly have an effect.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So just a few months ago, pre-COVID, everything's like pre and post-COVID. I guess we have to come up with words for that. Maybe that is the word. But the Sacramento area had some of the highest year-over-year increases in the country. As you just mentioned, it has softened. What do you see moving forward?
So right now with Mind Property Management, we are not increasing rents on current units that leases are expiring. We're holding the rent, so basically offering a renewal to the current tenant. So because we want them to stay, obviously, at the same rate that they paid over the last 12-month lease term. Mm-hmm. So we are not implementing any increases right now.
And then in the housing segment that we just had, we talked about that Bay Area effect, people coming in from the Bay Area for more affordable living in some cases. And because you can work remotely in a lot of cases, maybe some people want to come to the Sacramento area, rent here, sample it before they choose to buy a home. Are you seeing anything along those lines?
You know, actually, I am not in my portfolio seeing a lot of people moving from the Bay to come and rent here. And that's because our rents are slightly comparable to what they were paying in the Bay. I mean, not exactly as high for the product, but we are actually seeing, and I researched this yesterday, a lot of people that are relocating from the Bay are actually moving out of the state of California because it's cheaper to purchase and have the same mortgage payment than they would pay in rent either here or in the Bay Area.
All right. Okay. And so your company, help us understand how a rental company like Mind works. You have landlords, and the landlords may own just a home or an apartment complex, but they don't want to necessarily deal with the day in, day out collecting the checks and if there is a plumbing leak or that sort of thing, right? And then that's where your company steps in and takes care of it for them?
Absolutely. So they're actually investors. And we are the landlord. So we are the property management company. So we do manage the homes for our investors that own the buildings or the properties. So we take care of everything from finding a tenant, all maintenance, turning the unit to get it rent ready for new occupants, marketing. We basically take care of everything from start to finish.
So recently, we saw a massive downturn in the California economy and an unprecedented number of jobs that were lost. There was a ban on evictions. Yet not everyone was able to pay their rent. And so I'm wondering, how does that work then in your situation where you're managing these properties for these investors who, you know, have properties? How's that all working out?
So basically, yes, we cannot send a tenant to eviction for non-payment of rent right now because of this pandemic. So what we've been doing is actually offering payment arrangements for the tenants that have suffered a loss in their job, waiting for unemployment benefits, have pay cuts. So what we have done is we've actually worked with these tenants and the investor, because they have to approve this as well, to make a payment arrangement so they pay what they can. And at the end of the day, when this is all lifted and everybody goes back to work, then we have an agreement with them to pay additional on their rent to bring it all up, so they don't have a huge balance at the end of the day from not paying. So we are working with them based on what they're able to afford. And then we're also offering out an extended lease term, so that way they can make up that difference. And that so far has been successful. Mm-hmm. So, and we're not sending them to eviction because, or we can't. And this is part of the plan that we put in place. So that way they're able to continue living in their home, pay a portion of their rent. And at the end of the day, they'll finish paying the rest of it. And everything would be is satisfied.
How far can you push those payments out?
So right now we're pushing them out approximately about 6 to 9 months further. So when everything goes back to normal, right now it's this new normal,
right.
And hopefully they will, you know, be able to return to their employment and have their income that they're used to and be able to make that little additional payment every month on top of their regular rent.
Right. Cindy, how long does this rent protection or this eviction protection go? And what do you foresee happening after that? I've heard people toss around expressions like we're going to see mass evictions. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, the courts will most likely see a lot more evictions than they're used to, especially for people that are not working out payment plans with their landlords or just ignoring the fact that they have to pay rent. Some people do believe that we're in the middle of a pandemic, I'm protected, you can't evict me. But at the end of the day, the rent is still due. So, you know, they have to understand that. So if it does go to the eviction process once this is lifted, and in terms of timing, everything keeps getting pushed out. So actually, that answer is really not something that anybody can answer at this time.
Mm-hmm.
How long this is going to continue. We could be, you know, in quarantine or locked down for many more months. You know, we don't know. So it will take quite a long time once this is over and lifted for the courts to start seeing these cases. And by then the tenants may be further behind and further behind. So, right. You know, hopefully we just want to make sure people are, stick to their payment plans, pay your property manager what you can, work with them, communicate. So that way that can be avoided because nobody wants an eviction on their record. So
communication is key.
Communication is key.
All right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cindy Brilla is with Mind Property Management, a company that manages literally thousands of properties in the Sacramento region. Cindy, thank you so much for your insight today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
The rental market right now is, as we've been discussing, in a very unusual situation. Record number of people have lost their jobs in California, and the economy continues to shift from reopening back to shutting down. These are uncertain times, to be sure, and they're layered on top of a rental market in California that has seen surging rent prices over the past decade. However, that's softened, as we just learned from Cindy, especially in Northern California and in Sacramento specifically. Housing expert and policy advocate with Public Advocates, Michelle Parisette joins us to address some key issues currently facing tenants. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, help us understand the scope of the problem with rent as you see it in California.
I can do that. Under the best of circumstances, you know, pre-COVID, low-income and middle-income tenants were really struggling with the high price of rent in California. You know, Cindy spoke to that. You know, we have a really we have expensive housing here for a variety of reasons, you know, and that's pre-COVID. So back in March, we told millions of people, the government said, stay home. Millions of people lost their jobs. And that's a good thing. That should have happened, right? But now we're at a stage where we need to make sure all those people we told to stay home can stay in their home. You know, we are still seeing, I think the numbers from EDD for May were 16.3% unemployment. That's still a lot of folks who don't have jobs. You know, and our unemployment rate is calculated by the people who successfully apply for unemployment. So there's a huge portion of that of our community that isn't accounted for. They're undocumented folks, people who are working in the informal economy, you know, and all the people who applied for unemployment back in March who still haven't gotten a check, who do qualify, right? We've seen several of our legislators on social media trying to get EDD's attention because they can't even get a phone call returned, right? So we're dealing with a lot of folks who are struggling financially, you know, and the governor in response to this crisis around who can pay their rent and who can't, right, is done some executive orders that allow for local eviction moratoria, and judicial counsel has implemented a statewide eviction moratorium. Cindy referenced this.
Yeah, how long is that in place for, or it just continues to get pushed off, as Cindy was mentioning?
Right, so that depends. They tried to take a vote a few weeks ago that would have rolled back this eviction moratorium, but I think they got a lot of pressure from advocates and legislators because we're not ready. You know, as this crisis continues onward, but in the legislature, you know, we're not seeing the urgency that I think the moment calls for around rent and what's going to happen. And it's not just a crisis for tenants, right? It's a crisis for landlords as well, because the longer a tenant can't pay rent, you know, a landlord can't go for an infinite amount of time without, you know, they need to pay their mortgage, they need to pay taxes and their bills, right? So the solution that we come up with needs to keep everybody's head above water. That's the goal here, right? And there is some
That's not an easy task.
It is not an easy task, and it's not going to be cheap, right? I think, you know, this moment that we are in calls for creative solutions that, you know, things we haven't considered before, right? So there's two bills in particular I want to talk about. One is AB 1436 by David Hsu from San Francisco, and the other is SB 1410. And that bill is coming out of the Senate, authored by Senators Cabrillo and Bradford. So AB 1410 has money for landlords in it.
That's the Chu bill?
Credit. No, this is the Senate bill, the Cabrillo and Bradford bill, right? So it provides tax credits for landlords to help them overcome the loss from unpaid rent. And AB 1436 provides protections for tenants, right? So it makes sure that tenants cannot be evicted for unpaid debt and provides a path for paying that debt and protects their credit for the COVID period, right? And so an amalgam of these two bills, I think, is where we need to go to protect both tenants and landlords from this crisis that we're in.
Can that happen through the legislative process? Can you marry those two and make it one?
You know, there's talk about that. And you know, the legislature is really messy right now, as you can imagine, with the Capitol shut down. And, you know, there's we're on a very compressed and limited time frame here to act, because on a normal legislative process, we'd have these bills and they'd all go into effect in January, right? But that's far too late. We're going to see, you know, at the end of this month, potentially the loss of the $600 a week extra unemployment folks are seeing. And then we're going to start to see in California, because of how high our rent is here, a lot of more folks who aren't going to be able to pay their rent. We need to deal with this problem in a much shorter time frame. So there's quite a few advocates in the Capitol who are pushing on leadership to make these bills part of some kind of budget trailer bill that would go into effect immediately after it was passed and signed, right? Because we do need immediate solutions. You know, we have an opportunity to deal with this crisis, you know, proactively, rather than wait until, you know, there's a huge amount of damage done later on down the road.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, or we heard from property management that communication is key right now when it comes to the tenants letting their landlords or property managers understand the situation they're in. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we are invested in each other in this tenants need their, you know, to talk with their landlords, and landlords need to understand where their tenants are at and work with them to keep everybody in their homes. That's what we need to do right now.
Mm-hmm. If the bills were to go through the budget trailer process, does that provide the level of input from, you know, the public or concerned parties that through the traditional process would get?
You know, in the best of times, regular folks have a hard time engaging in the Capitol. That has never been more true than it is now, since you can't actually go in there, you know. Our democracy is imperfect under the best of circumstances, but in this circumstance, you know, people having access to the legislators and the process is not great.
Right.
But I would suggest to folks to reach out to their legislator, to their assembly member, to their state senator, and really explain to them how important this issue is to themselves, their family, and their communities.
Housing expert and policy advocate with Public Advocates based in Sacramento, Michelle Parisette. Thank you so much for your insight into this complex situation facing both tenants and landlords.
Thank you.
And up next, making a decision to move and to where can vary greatly depending on who you are. Race and sexuality play a role in how you might be accepted in your new community. You're listening to Insight right here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White, and we are back in a minute and a half.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Randall White. You know, even before the pandemic, a shift was happening in California with people fleeing expensive coastal areas for more affordable property in places like Sacramento, the foothills, and Reno as well. But simply deciding one day I want to live there instead of here because I can is a bit of what is known as privilege, both white and straight. More affordable rural areas are not always as accepting of Black, Brown, and LGBTQ populations. So for those groups, planting roots in a new, more rural location can involve some added social stressors. This is detailed in a recent piece by CalMatters reporter Lauren Helper called The Hidden Toll of California's Black Exodus. It's really worth a read, and we'll include a link to it in today's online Insight show notes at capradio.org/insight. That's likely not there yet, so you might have to wait till after the show. One of the voices quoted in that article is Willow Lung Amam, an associate professor of urban planning at the University of Maryland, and we're very fortunate to have the professor join us this morning. Good morning to you. And thank you for joining us on short notice.
Morning,
as well.
Randall.
Yeah. So how do you look at this overall situation? Because we're seeing a lot of movement, especially here in California. What are some of the stressors that people that decide to move from one place to the other may face based on their race or sexuality?
Well, I think it's important to go back and sort of do a little dive into history to understand the current moment. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things you have to understand about housing and land and property in the United States, and particularly on the West Coast, I'm calling from Washington, D.C., so the histories are a little bit different. But, you know, we have to consider the legacy of chattel slavery. We have to consider the legacy of the stealing of indigenous land and the continuous looting and enclosure of Black communities historically, and the number of tools that have been used to do that, to understand currently why populations are moving so quickly from places like Oakland and San Francisco. So if you understand sort of all the tools that went into the creation of Black communities in the city, then you can also see why some of those communities can be displaced so quickly. So what I'm talking about here is thinking about the history of racial zoning in the United States, the history of racial covenants and deed restrictions,
and a lot of us
blockbusting, redlining.
I was just going to say, a lot of us might, the term redlining might come to mind, representing some of the things that you just mentioned.
Yeah, of course, redlining is, I think, a tool that is coming into the public consciousness more and more these days. These are a tool that was essentially enacted by the federal government beginning in the 1930s during the New Deal, when home ownership was relatively rare. Most people, in order to own a home, had to be able to essentially put most of the money for your property down, because there was no federal investment in and mortgage loans. So with the start of what was known as the HOLC in the 1930s, that later transitioned to the Federal Housing Administration, the federal government took on the risk a lot of private banks extending mortgages to homeowners for a longer period of time, which made it then more easily accessible to a larger percentage of the United of the population, which then lends itself then to a whole huge growth of home ownership in the United States, and home ownership being the main tool of wealth building for most most working class and middle class families. It is essentially the idea of the American dream through building wealth through home ownership. That very tool was denied to African Americans. But it's just one example of the whole host of tools that was denied to African Americans, and the segregated housing market that actually predatorily was denied to African Americans and made home ownership more expensive, and also denied home ownership access to African Americans, and at the same time disinvested in those communities and further contained those communities to allow white communities to build wealth through home ownership.
This history that you're describing went a long way over decades to create very white pockets of California and very community of color pockets in California. And now we're seeing this shift while those rules don't still exist, the leftover effects of them are still there. And so, but now we're starting to see this mixing, and then that creates some tension.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the rules don't exist in the same way that they did in the 1930s and 40s, and even in the post-war generation. But the fundamental basis of an uneven housing market and uneven land use practices has not gone away. Mm-hmm. So we've morphed some of these tools into new practices of exclusion, right? So we have exclusionary zoning, for instance, that only allows large lot single family zones to be built, which largely means that only wealthy homeowners are going to go into those communities. We have municipal fragmentation that allows communities to draw lines and protect their taxes that only exist within those large lot communities, right? We have subsidies that go to homeowners that don't go to renters. We have a host of predatory tools that continue to exploit both the legacy of this housing market, but also that continue the perpetuation of it. So while we do have more quote unquote integrated, racially integrated communities than we have in the past, we also have a lot of forces working against both race and class integration still today.
All right, a good explanation on the history and where everything stands right now from Willow Lung Amam, an associate professor of urban planning at the University of Maryland. Thank you for, on very short notice, making it to join us today. We appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
And we want to close out Insight this week with you with a sampling of new music. Performances with live audiences, as we know, concerts and other musical events might be on hold indefinitely because of the coronavirus pandemic. But that does not mean you can't still catch up with some of the best music so far of 2020. Fiona Apple's latest masterpiece to James Brown's former sax player, a Dallas funk trio, and a pair of brothers. As fresh today as in 1974, it's all part of Cap Radio's modern music director, Nick Bruner's sound advice. And he joins us back here on Insight. And I have a lamp in between the two of us. I apologize, Nick, but I can see you. We are more than 6 feet apart. We're probably 12 feet apart. Mm-hmm. But it's good to see you. And so you're going to start with a song by a band from Houston called Krungbin. And the song is Pelota. I started listening to it last night. My husband and I could not stop listening to it because we liked it so much. Although he said that the words didn't make a whole lot of sense.
I've heard that as well. Yes, the vocalist for Krungbin was just sort of learning Spanish as they were putting that song together. Not a lot of their songs have lyrics. This is one of them. And I've heard similar observations.
Right.
Yeah, this track. This is going to be in your head forever.
So what the chorus is saying there, Nick, is right now I can become the ball. I can become a ball. I'm not sure if that means like, you know, curling up into a ball, but it's a pretty fascinating video online, too. This is how much we liked it. We looked up the video.
Video's excellent.
And it's all animated and it's really cool. So anyway,
the new album is called Mordecai. And yeah, I can't recommend it enough. It's this like warm kind of stony, just wonderful kind of funk music.
And this is their third?
I believe so, yeah. They put an EP out maybe a year and a half ago with Leon Bridges, which is really good, called Texas Sun. That's where I first found out about them. But, man, this song just took me... I had to have this record the second I heard about it.
And they played Harlow's a couple of years back, clearly, that's not happening anytime soon.
Yeah. You know, Randall, I was going to see how long we could get into this segment before COVID or pandemic or
was
coronavirus
brought up.
Was mentioned. And just the first word out of your mouth.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay. I don't want to ignore it, but man.
Trust me, working in the newsroom for the last 5 or 6 months hasn't been, you can't get away from that word. So, okay, let's move on to the next song by is it Maceo Parker?
Maceo Parker.
Maceo.
Yeah, Maceo Parker was James Brown's longtime sax man, and he recently put out a record called Cooking with Maceo, and it covers, he covers one of his own songs, and this is Cross the Tracks.
Come on, lemonade, you ought to get right back. Across the track. You wanna get right back?
another earworm for you today, right?
Oh, man. Well, so this song originally came out in 1975. But if you're familiar with that version and you hear it compared to this one, you find this one maybe swings a little more, maybe swaggers is a better term. The edges of the 1975 version have been smoothed, but they haven't been dulled. And I just think it's great. Parker is 77 years old, still making music. And yeah, it's one of my favorite records this year so far.
So many years ago, I won't say how many, back when I was in college, I had a good friend.
Oh, that many.
who loved Fiona Apple. And she's still making new stuff.
Fiona Apple is a force of nature, and a new record from her is a lot like Halley's Comet. It's infrequent, but when it happens, everyone gets super excited about it. So her latest, Fetch the Bolt Cutters, came out in mid-April, but as we kind of been talking about, at that time, here at the station, we were all just kind of like, I didn't have time to catch up with it then, so catching up with it now, this is an early cut on the record called Shamika.
Shamika said I had potential.
Nick, how would you describe Fiona Apple's genre?
Oof. I suppose she's up there with, like, contemporaries would be like Tori Amos, I think, would be a pretty good comparison. Like, I could see them both on tour.
It's like a rock,
Baroque pop, speedy, frustrated, and I'm getting bad at genres. I kind of abandoned like subgenres and subgenres years ago. I'm like, nah, that's good.
Right, it's good.
Yeah, it's good.
Falls into the good category.
Mm-hmm. I love the frantic pace of that song, by the way. And Apple has always been one of the wittiest lyricists around. So if you've been itching for that and you haven't gotten a chance to jump on this new record, now's a good time to do it.
Now's the time to jump on it.
Fetch the Bolt Cutters. Fetch the Bolt. Ugh, my mouth this morning, Randall.
That's
Fetch
okay.
the Bolt Cutters.
Fetch the Bolt Cutters.
Mm-hmm.
Your final track to share with us on this sound advice today is by Sparks.
Yeah, these are two brothers who've been at it since 1974, Ron and Russell Mayle. They've always had this kind of, I don't know, it's been such hard to describe music, but it's really excellent pop music. And they sound as fresh as they did when they got started. Their new album is really, really good. This is the second track on the record called All That.
I don't need to fool around, and I don't need to drool around. I'm with you, dear, 'cause it's time to go. While others may have so much more to say, each street we walk on's Les Champs-Élysées. All that we've done, we've lost, we've won.
Okay, that's Sparks. Not the Sparks, just Sparks.
Sparks.
And did I understand you correctly? The 24th studio album by this group?
That is correct. The 24th album by this group. It's called A Steady Drip, Drip, Drip. It's got a great sense of humor. It's a lot of fun. It's just, it's melodic and it's catchy. It's poppy. It's excellent.
Where are they from?
Sparks is from Los Angeles.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say Nevada.
I see what you did.
See what I did there? Right. Okay, so Krungbin with the song Pelota,
Maceo Parker.
Maceo Parker. I can't seem to get that.
Mm-hmm. Cross the track.
Cross the track. Fiona Apple, Shamika,
mm-hmm.
and Sparks, All That. Do you have a favorite in that list?
I probably got to go with Krungbin. It's a tough pick, but I mean, that's been in my head for, it was in my head for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, and I didn't get tired of it then. So, Pelota.
All right. Nick Bruner. Thank you so much. How's your show going on the weekends?
Oh, it's going great. You can catch it at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoons and again at 8 online whenever you want it, capradio.org/heylisten.
And are you still calling it socially distanced Saturday? Or
Just to wrap that up, we wrapped up the name Socially Distant Saturday when California was set to reopen, and then about a week later it was like, hey, we're going to close back up again.
So
like,
okay.
All right, you know, it's going to be Hey Listen. It's going to be a modern mix of music discovery, and we still have a commitment to local bands as well. So.
Nick, I always enjoy every single second with you. Thank you.
Thanks, Randall.
For being here today. Some sound advice. That is Insight for today. I'm Randall White with producers Kyle McKinnon and Cynthia Lopez. Our digital team, Chris Hagen, Emily Zentner, Helga Salinas, and Chris Vera Phillips. Technical director, Mark Jones. Our engineer today, Devin Cortan. Insight's managing editor and the guy who put this show today together, Aram Sarkissian. Joe Barr is Cap Radio's chief content officer. As always, thanks for joining us. We'll see you again on Monday.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.